since it's Hanukkah, I just wanted to begin with a short thought on Hanukkah, which has to be developed a little further. Maybe later on today we'll get a chance to develop it. In the Nusach of Al-Nisim, it says, V'achakach bo v'necho l'dvir be'secha. And there's an emphasis here on bonim. A certain chavivus of Klal Yisrael that they call bonim. Atem kriyim bonim. The Gemara Bava Basra Daf Yud says the following: Bizman shatem osim retonu shel mokom atem kriyim bonim. Apparently, the Jewish people at the time of the Nes could be described as Atem kriyim bonim, atem osim retzonu shel mokom. They went out to battle against the Yevonim. They put their lives on the line, and all for the sake of dedication to Klal Yisrael. And it's funny, the Gemara goes on to say that if we're not osim retzonu shel mokom, then we're considered avod. So let's get back to Purim now. Okay. From Hanukkah to Purim, and then hopefully back to Hanukkah again. So just to finish up a little bit on what we started, or what's today? Today is Wednesday?
Today is Wednesday.
Well, I think it was already on Monday that we started analyzing this essay about Simchas Purim. And we said that there was a machlokas between the Marshal and the Magen Avraham. Let's just go over it one more time. What do you need?
No.
I have some shekels if you need.
It's not a problem, don't worry.
You have 20 shekels? No? Not good enough? You need big money. All right. So what's the Marshal? The Marshal says that if you omit Al-Anisim in benching on Purim, then you have to repeat Perkas HaMazon, because he holds that Simcha on Purim has a din of Simchas Yontif. And just like on Yontif, we're required to set up a Sudal Pas and fulfill the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif. And therefore, once there's a Chi of Su'uda ala pas on Yontif because of the Sumachta b'chagecha, therefore Yalav Yovel becomes critical, and if you omit it, you have to repeat Berkas HaMazon. So too, since on Purim the Megillah describes Purim as a Yontif, it also has a din of Simcha and Suda to be Koveh ala pas, and therefore if you omit ala nisim, you'd have to repeat benching. That's the sheet of the Marshal. The Magen Avraham, on the other hand, says no. According to the Magen Avraham, Purim is not called a Yontif, it has a Chi of Simcha, but that Chi of Simcha is only Basar V'Yayin. And we said yesterday that it pinpointed during those hours, those moments that you're eating Basar or drinking Yayin. The Chi of Pas on Yontif, that comes from Kibud V'Oneg, the mitzvah of Kibud, and that doesn't apply to Purim. That's what we discussed yesterday. But let's go back to the Marshal. The Marshal is saying that there's a din of Simcha on Purim that's equivalent to Simchas Yontif. And just like on Yontif, you have the mitzvah of Simcha, and you have to be Koveh Suda, and eat Pas, so too on Purim. The only problem is that Yontif itself is divided into two categories. We have Yontif, and we have Chol HaMoed. Now, the halacha is that v'samachta v'chagech, the mitzvah of Simcha, applies not just on Yontif itself, but throughout the entire Chag. And the Rambam codifies that explicitly in Perek Vav Milchus Yontif. All 8 days of Sukkot, all 7 days of Pesach, they all require Simcha. And yet, the halacha of Chol HaMoed, even though it has Simcha, is that since it's not called Mikroi Kodesh, and it doesn't have an Isra Moloch, it's not Chayv in Pas. And everybody agrees that if you omit Yal V'Yovo in benching on Chol HaMoed, you don't repeat benching. So when we get to Purim, and the Marshal says we should equate Purim with Yontif, The question is, why should we equate it with Yontif? Let's equate it with Chol HaMoed. Just like Chol HaMoed is lacking in the status of Mikrei Kodesh, and therefore doesn't require Pas, so too Purim, even if you want to call it a Yontif, but it's like Chol HaMoed. It doesn't have the status of Mikrei Kodesh. There's no Issa Melach on Purim. So why would the Marshal say that there's a Chiv Simcha on Purim like that of Yontif, and that generates a Chiv Pas, and again, if you omit Ala Nisim, you have to repeat benching, why not equate, wouldn't it be more logical to equate Purim, not with Yontif, but rather with Chol HaMoed? That's the question that he wants to ask. And he wants to quote a Meiri in Beitza, Daf Tezvavam in Beis. The Meiri says that according to Rabbi Lezer, you need Kviyas Su'uda when you're not learning, meaning there's Yoshev Veshone, and that's called Lashem, and there's eating a Su'uda. And you have the choice. In other words, you either go one way or the other. It's either Lashem or Lachem. Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, says that you could combine both, and you could set up Chetzi Lachem and Chetzi Lachem, Lashem. Now, let's take the case, says the Meiri, of Rosh Chodesh, Chol HaMoed, and Chanukah, those cases. Says the Meiri, they're all Osir B'tainis, but he says, V'ein Tzor K'viya Suda B'pas. So the Meiri is explicit that Chanukah, which appears on his list, does not require K'viya Suda B'pas. But he doesn't say anything about Purim. So let's go on and read the next part of the Meiri. The Meiri says that with regard to Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed and Chanukah, all you need is mini targima. Yes, you can eat sweets, you can eat cookies, whatever you like to eat, but you don't have to eat pas with a kviyas suda. But then he writes that Purim, umayle yoma de kipure, Purim and Erev yoma kipurim, tzrichim kviyas suda. And he writes, Purim mishum simcha yisera. So the Meiri says that on Purim, the reason why you require Seuda and Kviya Suda and Pas is because of Simcha Yisera. Now this Meiri becomes a clear-cut source for the Marshal. The Marshal said that you have to be Koveya Suda La Pas on Purim. And now the Meiri is explicit about that. He's very clear about that. So the Meiri holds that on Purim you have to be Koveya Suda Pas because of Simcha Yisera. And the Meiri says that even though on other Yomim Tovim, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you're allowed to fast because you could go with Kula Lashem, he would agree that on Purim, you have to set it up as a Yemei Mishteh. There's no fasting on Purim. So whereas on Yontif, you could tolerate fasting, on Purim there's no zero tolerance for fasting. So you may mishta, you may simcha, there's no fasting. And he quotes the Gemara Psachim Adaf Samachesam in Beis Omer of Yosef, HaKol Modim V'Purim Dibi'ina Nami Lochem. That even though Rabbi Lezer is of the opinion that on Yontif you could have Kul Hashem, and therefore you could fast, dedicate your whole Yontif to learning Torah and davening, but on Purim, even he would agree that you need Lochem. And the Gemara says, my taima, you may mishta v'simcha k'sivbe. So the Meiri is learning that when the Gemara establishes that on Purim there's no tolerance for fasting, and that even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that there's no Kul Hashem, it's got to be Lachem, what the Gemara has in mind is that on Purim there's a Simcha Yisera. Now the Marsha in Psachim over there on Daf Samaches Amid Beis makes the following comment. And he says that if the Megillah would have said Simcha Morning, then Enochinami we could have said that it has the same status as Yontif. And then according to Rabbi Eliezer, you could have the possibility of Kul Hashem, and you could even fast on Purim. But the Megillah adds another word. It's Yimei Simcha Umishteh. Says the Marashah, because the Megillah adds another word to describe Purim, and that's Mishteh, Therefore, even Rabbi Eliezer, who has on Yontif the possibility of Kulul Hashem, would agree that on Purim we need Lachem. So if we put together the Meiri together with the Marshah, we get the following picture in Amon. That Purim is even more strict and more demanding than Yontif itself, as far as being Koveh Seuda. Because on Yontif, at least going to Rabbi Eliezer, you can get away without eating a Seuda, because he has the possibility of Kulo Lashem. But even he would agree, the Gemara says in Pesachim, that on Purim, you need Lachem. And the Meiri formulates it as Simcha Yisera, that if you compare the Simcha of Purim to the Simcha of Yontif, Purim has a Simcha Yisera, an extra element of Simcha. The Marshah says it a little differently. The Marshah says that because the Megillah says it's not just Yimei Simcha, but also Yimei Mishteh, the extra word Mishteh is coming to tell you that you have to eat this wonderful Suda. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, in Yontif, you could have Kul Hashem and you learn Torah the whole day. You could even fast according to him, and you don't have Lachem at all. But on Purim, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that there's an element, a requirement of Lachem.
Does that mean the Suda requires
Pas.
Yeah, so.
And the Meiri says it explicitly. He says that whereas Chanukah doesn't require Su'udas Pas, he says Purim requires Su'udas Pas. He compares to Erev Yom HaKippurim. And with regard to both of them, he says Simcha Yisera.
So then, yesterday you were talking about the obligation of women and the implication that has.
Oh. So if you go like the Bogen Avram, who says that there is no Chiyuv Su'udon Pas with regard to Purim, and therefore if you omit Alanisim in Birkas Mazon, you don't have to repeat it. It means that Purim doesn't have a Chiyuv Suda Lapas, a Kviyuv Suda Lapas. I Yontif has a Chiyuv Suda Lapas. So we explained based on Rabbi Kveger, I don't know if you were here, that the Chiyuv Suda Lapas on Yontif is not a result of Simcha, but rather a result of Kibud.
Right.
So Kibud we have on Yontif, we don't have it on Chol HaMoed, and we certainly don't have it on Purim. So the whole idea of Kviyas Suda Lapas with regard to Purim is completely dropped according to Magen Avraham. It's purely voluntary. There's no requirement of Sudas Purim, which is meaning Alapas. And all you need for Simcha is Achilas Basa and Shasias Yayin. Therefore, there are two implications. Implication number one is that if you omit Yalanisim in Birkas HaMazon, according to the Magen Avraham, you don't repeat Birkas HaMazon, there's no Chiyuv Suda. All you need is Yayin and Basa. But the second implication, as far as Nashim is concerned, and that goes back to Yontif itself. We said that on Yontif, if you omit Yal V'Yavo, then you have to repeat Birkas HaMazon. That's because on Yontif there's a Chiyuv Suda Lapas. But that only makes sense for men, but not for women. Why? Because Rabbi Kveger insists that the mitzvah of Kibud is a mitzvah seishas man groma. And if we're saying that, as far as Simcha is concerned, men and women are equal, but there's no chiyuv of Kviya Suda Lapas, why in Yontif do you have to be Koveh Suda Lapas? It's only because of Kibud. So Rabbi Kveger says that Kibud does not apply to women. Why? Because we classify Kibud as a mitzvah seishas man groma. So it's interesting. The Torah in Simcha went out of its way to include women. It says, Atova Ishtacha, Banecha, etc., etc. But the Torah never went out of its way with regard to Kibud to include Noshim. So therefore, the status of Kibud is like that of any mitzvah seishas man groma, therefore, women are pturos.
But if you hold, like,
like the Marshal,
then it's the opposite, then. You do have to repeat if you miss Alanisim, because
right, the Marshal is assuming, and we're trying to find sources for the Marshal already in Rishonim, that on Yontif you have a mitzvah of Simcha and you have to be Koveh Suda Lapas. Then there'd be no difference between men and women. On Purim you have Simcha Yisera. Now why do I need the Simcha Yisera? Because since Purim is devoid of what's called Mikrai Kodesh, therefore its status logically should have been that of Chol HaMoed, not of Yontif. So we need some extra element into the equation to justify this conclusion, which is the conclusion of the Meiri, that Sudas Purim requires Pas. It can't be just an equation to Yontif, because Yontif itself is divided up into two categories. There's Yontif and then there's Chol HaMoed. And it would seem that Purim, insofar as it's like Chol HaMoed and it's devoid of Mikrai Kodesh, would have the same status as Chol HaMoed, and then you don't have to be Koveh Asuda LaPas. And yet the Marshal, based on the Me'iri, and the Me'iri says it quite explicitly, the Lashon of the Me'iri is that Purim Umali Diyom HaKippur Tzrichim Koveh Asuda. So the question is why? What element would justify the requirement of Kviyas Suda LaPas in Purim, even if you're going to grant me that I equate it to Yontif? And even if I grant you that Yontif, according to the Marshal, requires Kviyas Suda LaPas, but Yontif has another category, another subcategory, and that's what? Chol HaMoed. And Chol HaMoed, insofar as it's not Mikra Kodesh, certainly doesn't require Kviyas Suda LaPas. That's explicit according to everyone. So why equate Purim to Yontif? Why not equate Purim to Chol HaMoed in the sense that they're both Purim and Chol HaMoed are devoid of Mikra Kodesh, and there's no Kedush Sayom and no Isur Malacha.
So
the element, I complete what we started, is that the Meiri adds a new element over here to the equation, and he says that Purim requires a Simcha Yisera. And we were wondering what this concept of Simcha Yisera, an extra element of Simcha, and that's what justifies the Chiv of being Koveh Asuda, according to the Meiri, on Purim. And here we quoted the Marsha, because the Marsha says that if the Megillah would have just described the days of Purim as what? As Simcha, then Enoch Inami, we would have equated with the Simcha of Chol HaMoed. And that would require mini de targima, he says, just have a nice piece of cake. He doesn't require pas. But the Megillah goes out of its way to add another word to describe the essence of Purim. It's not just what?
Simcha,
but it's also Mishteh. So if you put the Meiri together with the Marsha, A plus B, you have the Meiri who says that the Simcha Yisera on Purim, which means that Purim goes beyond Yontif, whereas on Yontif, let's say, according to Rabbi Eliezer, you can fast on Yontif, because he recognizes Kulul Hashem. On Purim, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you need Lachem, and he defines that as Kviyas Suda, Alapas. And the reason for that is Simcha Yisera. Take the Simcha Yisera of the Meiri and combine it with the Marsha, who calls it Yimei Mishteh, and what you get is C. What's C? C is the Marshal. The Marshal says that you have to be Koveh Asuda on Purim, and if you omit Al-Anisim, you have to repeat Pinch.
Now, would this be, but would he still consider it a mitzvah saseh shizman grama, so therefore it's not, the women are pater, or?
What are we talking about? Talking about Purim?
We're talking about the Suda for Purim.
So anything that has to do with Purim is not considered shizman grama, because afein hoyu bosa on this. So women are obligated to Megillah, and they're obligated
to Suda also, though. But this extra level of Simcha and the Suda, according to the Marshal,
is both for men and women.
Okay.
So both men and women would have to be, according to the Marshal, would have to be Koveh Suda LaPas on Purim, and if you omit Yalav Yom, you'd have to repeat Benching.
So are they then also obligated in drinking?
Well, that's a whole sugya, whether Chayvonim L'Psumim V'Puriyah applies to women or not. Pashas it should. But if I say that out loud, they'll put me in Cherim, Say that a woman should get drunk on Purim, they'll mamish put me in cherim. You won't see me here in the shtibo, because there'll be pachke villas all over the place. But logically, there's no difference between men and women as far as the nature of Simcha and Mishteh. So if Simcha and Mishteh go to Rava, whether we pass like Rava is a different story. And how do you fulfill Rava's din? Maybe by falling asleep, I don't know. But whatever it is, it should apply equally to both men and women. That's why. But we have a whole discussion about that, not for today. Now, the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Tuf Resh Tzadi Vav, Yesh Misha Omer Sha'onein Mutter Bebosar V'yayin. Okay, this is mind-boggling, and it'll tie into everything we've been discussing. An onein means he lost one of his relatives, and it's before the burial. He's not allowed to eat meat, he's not allowed to drink
wine. Doesn't he putter from all mitzvahs?
And he's putter from all mitzvahs. But the question is whether he's an onein or not. Is he an onein? In Yiddish we say to prava aninus. Prava means to be noheg, meaning to live out and behave like an onein. Because if he does so, that's part of an avelus. And now it's Purim. So what do we have here? We have a conflict between Purim and avelus.
But if he's putrim from all mitzvahs, then...
Only if it's an onein. But the question is he an onein?
Okay. So
is there a status of an onein on Purim? So it's mind-boggling. The Mechaber says, drop aninus. Forget it. There's no such thing as aninus on Purim. Mutter v'basar ushtias yayin. And listen to the logic of the Mechaber. This is the lashon of Rav Yosef Kairo, right, in the Shulchan Aruch. He says, Delo asi avelus de yachid vidachi ase de rabim de oraisa. That extra word de oraisa is mind-boggling. Now we'll explain that in just a minute. But what he's saying is that with all due respect to avelus, and you might even call it doraisa, because some rishonim hold that aninus is doraisa until kvura. But nevertheless, it's only the yachid. It has a relative to Purim, it has a lower status. Why? Because it's only an individual mitzvah. It's a personal mitzvah, and that personal mitzvah doesn't have the power to trump an essay de rabin, a mitzvah that's incumbent upon everyone, and that's Purim. Now, wait a second. If I assume that Aninus is Doraisa, it's very hard to say that, because Purim as a rabbinic institution, with all due respect to the fact that it's incumbent upon everyone, it's an Asei D'Rabim, that Asei D'Rabim would trump a mitzvah Asei D'Oraisa of Aninus, even if it's a Yachid. So the Mechaber adds another word. Essay de Rabin de Oraisa. So I both said, we're going to say something now that's really radical, and they won't put me into Cherem for this. I promise you, because this is in the Mechaber and Shulchan Aruch. So if they want, they can put the Shulchan Aruch into Cherem, but not Berzon. And the Shulchan Aruch says that Purim is Doraisa. Wild. Right. And if Purim is Doraisa, now we can equate Aninus, which might be Avelus Doraisa, it's derived from the parish of Nodav Avihu, and compare that to another Doraisa called Purim, and Purim has one advantage over Avelus. It's Derabim, and it's not the Yochid. Says the Mechaber, the Lismach bePurim Divrei Kabbalin inhu veHem kiDivrei Torah. That since Purim is encoded in the Megillah itself, which is Kisvei HaKodesh, we had a whole sugi about whether or not, you know, it wasn't so easy to get Megillus Esther in there, but once we got it canonized as part of the Chavtal Kisvei HaKodesh, it has the status of Divrei Kabbalah. Says the Mechaber that Divrei Kabbalah is Kedivrei Torah. Now again, this has to be analyzed from many different perspectives, but one of the perspectives is going to have to be Avelus the Yochid of Aninus. It could be Aninus itself is only Midivrei Kabbalah, and therefore it equals out, and then we could say Essay the Yochid and Essay the Rabbi. In any event, the Magen Avraham asks the following kasha on the Mechaber. He says, "The Yontif Nami Ksiv Beis Simcha." On Yontif it says Simcha. V'ein Leonein Lechol Basar. And he says the following, that for the sake of Simchas Yontif, now where would you classify Simchas Yontif as far as Doraisa and Derabbanan is concerned?
The Samach
Tumchagat. The Samach Doraisa. Says the Magen Avraham that Biyontif Ksiv Simcha, and yet we don't find that Avelus is going to be trumped by, be, you know, overridden by Simcha and Yontif. So that, I guess, again, we have to research this, so what I'm telling you now is Beiravon Mugbal, but I think he's saying that an Onen will be Asur in Basar and Yain, even on Simch, on Yantif, where Lechor Simchas Doraisa, says the Magen Avraham, to be Yantif Ein Chiyuv Lechol Basar Min HaTorah El Bizman Beis HaMikdash. What? Says the Magen Avraham, at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they brought what kind of karbanos on Yontif? Shlamim. And what was the mitzvah to do with shlamim? To eat the basa. That's the mitzvah d'oraisa of v'samachta b'chagecha. So when we sit down on Yontif, and Baruch Hashem, my wife prepares a beautiful meat, you know, piece of meat, you know, tzlikatev, and it's roasted, it's all great. That's only d'rabbanan, says the Magen Avraham. And therefore, Avelus could trump with d'rabbanan. Masha'en came Purim. Purim is already Midivrei Kabbalah. It's unbelievable. He's saying that Purim has a greater mitzvah of Simcha than even Yontif itself. Now, this Magen Avraham is against the Rambam that we discussed at great length yesterday. The Rambam says that even though Bizman Beis HaMikdash, the mitzvah was V'samachta with Achila Shlomim, but the Rambam says that Achila Shlomim is only a means to achieve Leo's tuv lev, sameach v'tuv lev. And then the Rambam goes on to expand that Bizman Azeh, we fulfill that same mitzvah, Samachta Bagechon, in many different ways. For men, it's eating meat and drinking wine. For women, in other ways, and Ketanim, other ways. But the Mogen Avraham is not going with the Rambam Shita. He's based on the Shita that Bizman Azeh, Achilas Basar on Yontif, is only a Chiv Drabbanon. It's not Doraisa. And then Afkavim is going to be about an Onein on Yontif. Is he allowed to eat meat? Maybe even obligated to eat meat, or is he enjoined from eating meat? The answer is, since Avelus is so chamur, it's going to trump the mitzvah of eating meat on Yantav, because the Isser of eating meat on Yantav, the mitzvah of eating meat on Yantav is only the Rabbanah Bismanas, that we don't have the base on Mikdash and Shlomim. And if you take this whole discussion in the context of the Mogen Avraham, the Shulchan Aruch, it comes out that Simcha on Yantav is dwarfed by Simcha and Purim, because Simcha and Purim is going to override Avelus, because Divrei Kabbalah and Divrei Torah. Whereas Simcha on Yontif, as far as eating meat is concerned, is only Durabana. Do you hear this, Rabbi? Who would walk out of here with the idea that Simcha and Purim is on a higher level than Simcha and Yontif? Like, if you told me this in the middle of the night, I would just tell you you're crazy to say such a thing. That's absolutely ludicrous. And this is a chidushei Torah here, because the Mogen Avraham says on the Shulchan Aruch, who says that Purim will trump the Isra Achilas Basar of an Onen, but Yontif would not be able to trump the Isra Achilas Basar of an Onen, because Purim is a greater simcha than Yontif.
Does he have an opinion on that? Like this?
It's very hard for me to even entertain this according to the Rambam, because the Rambam holds that Simchas Yontif and Basar is Doraisa. So you have to see what the Rambam would say about Onein on Yontif. I don't know. But wait, let me just finish, because I'm going to lose my trend. So now, what we have is the possibility, according to the Mogen Avraham, that Simchas Purim supersedes Simchas Yontif. Now, according to the Meiri, let's go back to the Meiri that we started with. On Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, where there's a mitzvah of Simcha, there's no chiyuv to be Ochel Pas. That's what the Miri says explicitly. On Purim, he says, you have a chiyuv to be Koveh Asud Ol HaPas, meaning that Simcha's Purim exceeds the Simcha of Chol HaMoed. And the reason for that, says the Miri, is because it's Simcha Yisera, or to coin the phrase of the Marsha, because it says Mishtev Simcha. So it comes out like this. That afal gav de b'shar yomim tovim chayovim b'simcha, but you don't have to eat basar, because b'zman hazeh, according to the Mogen Avraham, we don't have what? We don't have karban shlamim. Mikom kom purim chayov b'simcha yiseru mishtev tzarich lechol basar, and that the Shulchan Aruch upgrades that to the achilas basar of b'divrei kabbalah k'divrei Torah. So b'meila it comes out that based on everything we've been saying to try to justify the Marshal says that just like on Yontif you have to be Koveh Asud Ol HaPas, so to on Purim you have to be Koveh Asud Ol HaPas. And we ask the question, well, why is that so? L'chora we should compare Purim to what? To Chol HaMoed, it doesn't have Mikrei Kodesh. The answer is, based on the Meiri and the Marsha, now we're also putting it into the Shulchan Aruch, that Simchas Purim is even greater than Simchas Yontif. So if Simchas Yontif requires you to be Koveh Asud Ol HaPas, says the Marshal, how much more so Simchas Purim, because of the Simcha Yisera and because of the element of Mishteh, and as a result, says the Marshal, we have to be Koveh Asud Ol HaPas on Purim, and not only that, if we omit Ala Nisim, we'll have to repeat Benchim. Now the Mogen Avraham doesn't go as far as to accept that idea, Svirle de Lecha Chiyuv Lechel Basar Bepurim, Svirle de Simchas Purim Lo Tzarech Pas. Okay, fine. That's already a different issue. That although the Mogen Avraham agrees that there's a great mitzvah of Simcha and Purim, and Simcha and Purim could trump even Aninus, but nevertheless, Simchas Purim doesn't require Pas, according to the Mogen Avraham. And we tried to explain that based on Rebbe Kivay. Okay, now the floor is yours. I just wanted to see what I could do. Okay, Rebbe, so that's what we started on. This was the fill-in time before 7:30, you know, that we started a few days ago. Okay, where are we up to now? Oh, we're on the eight veins, right? Yeah, on Zion of veins.
Yeah. We're just finishing up the last.
Yeah. You have to have strong bones for these sugyas, because, you know, in Yiddish, a bone is called a bane. So a bane. These are the bane, the main sugis. Okay, let me just screw on my head properly. Where are we up to?
What we're doing with this?
Well, for today, we're okay. And then we can discuss where we're going from here. Moshe told me that he can't be here today. So let's see. Are we up to Zion? There's one last thing. Rav Ashi Omar. So take a look at the last line of Zion on the base, just to finish this up. So let's just review what we know. The only way that we were able to explain our Mishnah and justify it according to the Tanakhama, because again, keep in mind, the Rav Hananya ben Gamliel says that there is no Malkus on Yom Kippur for violating Yom Kippur. That's because you get Kares, and Rav Hananya ben Gamliel is of the opinion that whenever the Torah was Machayev Kares, there's no Malkus, and therefore the Mishnah is very justified. It's very comfortable that the difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippurim is that this is Bidei Shamayim and this is Bidei Adam. One punishment is here. That's because on Yom Kippur there's no such thing as a punishment in Beis Din, in Bidei Adam, because once the Torah says for violating Yom Kippur you get Kares, then we activate the principle of Rabbi Yitzchak, right? And that was the last thing we did yesterday, that whenever the Torah says Yechayv Kares, then it means the Kares replaces Malkus. And there is no Malkus. You're alleviated from Malkus. And that's based on Achoso. Comes along Rav Ashi and he says, no, we don't have to introduce Rabbi Yitzchak over here. We can explain the Shita even according to the Rabbanon. And the Rabbanon says, you do get Malkus for violating Yom Kippur. If you get Malkus for violating Yom Kippur, how does the Mishnah say that the difference between Yom Kippur and Shabbos is that Shabbos is an onesh bidei Adam and Yom Kippur is bidei Shamayim? It's only Kares, but that's not really true. You get Malkus, which is also an onesh bidei Adam. Says Rav Ashi, afilu teima rabbanon, ikars dono bidei Adam. I'm sorry, zeh. I skipped the word zeh. Sorry, zeh ikar zdono bidei Adam, meaning Shabbos is ikar zdono bidei Adam. But v'zeh, but Yom Kippur is ikar zdono bihi kares. In other words, what the Mishnah is trying to do is compare the main severe punishment. So let's compare the chumras ha'onesh in the case of Shabbos. What's the maximum chumras ha'onesh, and what's the maximum chumras ha'onesh in the case of violating Yom Kippur? In the case of Shabbos, what's the maximum chumras ha'onesh that you can get?
Mises basis.
In the case of Yom Kippur, what's the maximum onesh?
Kares.
So that's called a punishment bidei shamayim. It's true that even on Yom Kippur there'll be a punishment bidei adam. The Mishnah never meant to say, says Rav Ashi, that there is no punishment bidei adam with regard to violating Yom Kippur, because in fact you will get Malkus. We're not holding like Rabbi Yitzchak. But nevertheless, the Mishnah wants to point out that if you talk about the maximum overwhelming onus that sort of dwarfs the onus of Malkus, that's the punishment Yom Kippur of Kares, in such a case, we have a punishment bidei Shamayim, as opposed to the maximum punishment of Shabbos, which is bidei Adam. Okay, if we had more time for this, I would, you know, I'd want to research this further, because it, you know, what is the halachic status of Ikar Zdono? You know, that's an interesting phrase that Rav Ashi is coining a new phrase here. Ikar Zdono. I mean,
I think that's because then you have the concept. Still, then you can apply Kamlei de Rabbanei.
Maybe that's what he means. You know, if you hold like Rav Nechunya ben Akana, I believe that Rav Gamliel, Rav Hananya ben Gamliel, but if you hold like Rav Nechunya ben Akana, that holds the Chayvei Krisus is Ein Bem Tashlumin. So if you violated Yom Kippur and at the same time you ripped someone's garment, you wouldn't have to pay, or you burnt down his haystack, you wouldn't have to pay damages. Maybe that's what he means by Iker Zdono. Okay, so now we turn to Daf Ches Amud Aleph, and on this Amud we have two Mishnayos. Actually, we have three Mishnayos. The first two are doable, shall I say. When I say by doable, I mean it's within my exposure in Shas. You know, there are certain parts of Shas that I've been exposed to. Other parts of Shas I've never been really exposed to in any heavy way. Like, for example, the third Mishnah on this daf has to do with Tumas Zav and Tumas Zav, basically. So that's going to be a challenge. So if we do decide to learn a different Masechta, let's do me a favor, do it by tomorrow, because otherwise I'm going to have to spend my entire day today studying Zav, and I have a pretty busy schedule today. But anyway.
Alternatively, we could learn it, but just go through what's...
Yeah, I'd say, but in the meantime, we'll just...
Question is, are you able to do that? I mean,
we'll just do it like art schools.
Right.
It's not that far. I'll tell you, if you take a look on Chesam Beis, we get back on the track.
I guess
on the bottom Mishnah. The question is,
are you able to do that? Like some people, it's once you start looking at something, it's hard to do it at a surface level.
I'll tell you what I'll try to do. I'll try to make it till Shabbos. If I can make it past tomorrow... You know, it's tomorrow. I'll give more or less what the Israelis talk about chafif. Are you familiar with that word? You know, milamala meaning superficial. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do is cover this sugi of zav and shteris and shalashris on a very superficial level, and that'll propel me till Shabbos. So, Okay, so now we're going to start learning a little bit about what's called Mudr Hanoa Michavero. So in the Parsha Nedarim, which is Parsha's Matos, at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, there's a general breakthrough, I would call it, a revolution of sorts, that a person could take upon himself an Isur, or she upon herself an Isur, that doesn't exist as far as the Torah is concerned. And that's called, in the language of the Torah, Ishki Yidar Neder, Lesar Yisrael Nafsho, Lo Yachel Dvaro. So if a person violates a Neder, which he is a self-assumed pledge, then he's in violation of both an essay, which is called Motsif Sosecha Tishmar, and a Losasev, Lo Yachel Dvaro. He even gets Malkus for that. So we're talking about a first-rate lav. Okay, now, in general... As far as the Parsha Nedarim is, I point to an object, and I say that this object should be usher to me as if it were a carbon. And that's called konomos at the beginning of Masechet Nedarim. But now I can do something else. The Parsha Nedarim tells me that I can even turn to a person and say to a person, I'm not going to be nene from you. I won't get any benefit from you whatsoever. Now, if I take on that classical case of Mudr Hanoa Michavero, then I cannot benefit from you in any way. For example, if you would invite me to, let's say I have to cross from place X to place Y, and you would invite me, instead of having to go around your field, I could be Doris, I could walk through your field, right? And I'm Mudr Hanoa from you, that's included in the Isra Hanah, because since you are telling me I'm allowed, you give me permission to, and there's no trespassing here, to go through your field, that also is a way of getting Hanah from you. That's also benefiting from you. Or for example, let's say you would lend me a kli, a vessel. For example, I need a table. Okay, table might not be a good example. Let me see if I can get a better example. Let's say I need a screwdriver. Okay, the reason why I want to leave out a table is because you can eat on a table, and that's not relevant to us today. For sure, I can't borrow your table if I'm Mudr Hanoa. But the chiddush is I can't even borrow your screwdriver, and the screwdriver can't be used for food because Mudr Hanoa means I've accepted an absolute all-inclusive Isur Hanoa. That's one category. Then there's another category called Mudr Mimenu Machal, where I say to you, I don't want to eat from you. So now I'm getting very specific, and I'm saying eating from you. So for example, if you would feed me a meal, then I would be in violation of that neder. If you would lend me a screwdriver, that would not be a violation of the neder, because you can't eat a screwdriver, right? And you can't even use it for food. But what happens if you want to benefit me in a way that's not food per se, but it's worth something? meaning it's sellable on a market. If you give me something that I can sell on the market, then I can take that money and I can eat. So lechor, at this point, anything that you give me, if we can define it as something that's marketable, would also be included under mudr mimenu machal. So the Mishnah now wants to know, so what are the parameters here? What would be the difference between mudr hanam michavero and mudr mimenu machal, where he only where he singles out hanas machal? Are you with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So the Mishnah says the following: Ein bei mudr hanam michavero le mudr mimenu machal. In other words, the similarity, the common denominator between mudr hanoa and mudr machal is so great that we have to look with candles in order to find the difference between the two. Why? Because even if I only pinpointed hanoas machal, if you give me a benefit, even if it's not machal, but I can convert that into machal, meaning I can sell it on the market and get a shove of pruta, and take that pruta and buy a little piece of maybe a fifth of a or a 50th of a sufganiya, that's also mudr adon. That's also mudr machal. So what is the difference? So the Mishnah comes up with two differences. Ella, number one, drisas regel. So if I'm mudr machal, hanos machal from you, and you want to invite me to cross through your pathway, that's not considered something I can sell on the market. You're just giving me what's called a vitur. Vitur means you're not holding, you know, you're not insisting on your rights, you know, to take your shotgun and get rid of me because I crossed into your field. But that's not something that's marketable. It's something that I could sell and convert into alcohol. And the second category is kelim she'ein osim v'hem ochel nefesh. And if you have a kli which I'm borrowing, I can't sell it, but you're allowing me to borrow it, but I can't use it for ochel nefesh. So if you, let's say, you would lend me a fork, a knife, or a spoon, or maybe even a table, or maybe even a chair to sit on so I could eat my machal, that all is related to machal. So we're broadening the definition of machal. And that's called the hanas machal, and that's prohibited. But if you give me a kli, which has no relation to machal whatsoever, then that's not a violation of hanos machal, but it would be a violation of mudr hanoh if he said hareini mudr hanoh mimcha. Now, before we go into the Gemara itself, let's just make the following comment. There are certain kelim, certain utensils, which are called derech lahaskir. In other words, given a certain time and a certain place, sociologically or financially, whatever it might be, these are rentable items. They're generally rented, and you bring in money for that. For example, if let's say you're an ice skater and you don't want to buy ice skates because you only go once every couple of decades. You know, you make it up to Metula, so you rent ice skates. Okay, so that's something rentable. Now, if let's say you own ice skates and I'm mudr machal mimcha, then if you lend me your ice skates free of charge, then I can theoretically rent them. Again, maybe no one would want to rent them, but let's say theoretically I could rent them. So that's again convertible into money.
Or you can look at it, you're saving the money on the rental that you would have.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the question is, because the Gemara is going to say it's derech lahaskir, meaning that. Yeah, you're right. It could be that. But let's go in a more simple way, that I can rent it out. So now I can take the money that I get from that accrues to me from rental because you allowed me to rent your kelim, and I can buy food with it. But now we're talking about kelim which are ein darkam lahaskir, that in that place and at that time people don't pay rental for that. So either you lend me a screwdriver or you don't lend me a screwdriver. But there's no official gemach, you know, rental gemach for screwdrivers. So therefore, if I cannot convert that benefit that you're giving me by allowing me to use your kli into a shava pruta, then it's not a violation of mudr machal. So again, mudr machal really means mudr mamon. Any hanos mamon that I can convert into tashlum, into monetary payment, that's included under this broader definition of mudr machal. So the only case of a kli, which number one cannot be used for food, and number two it cannot be rented because in that place no one pay rental for it, that's the case where mudr machel would be mutter. I'm not allowed to get machel from you, hanas machel, but you can give me these kelim. Why these kelim are not used in food and I cannot rent them, or ain't darken lahaskir, and therefore I don't get any monetary value that could be converted into ochel, and therefore it's mutter. But if it was mudr hanami chaver, and you want to give me your screwdriver and lend it to me, that would be awesome. So let's now go through the Gemara. The Gemara says the following. The distinction that the Mishnah postulates between Mudr Hanah and Mudr Machol is with regard to Kelim She'en Osim Bohem Ochel Nefesh. So the Gemara says, it would seem from the Mishnah, Hala Inyan Kelim She'en Osim Bohem Ochel Nefesh, Zev Zesh Shoven. So if, let's say, for example, you allow me to use your spoon, and I take the spoon and I eat my soup with it, that would be a violation of mudar machal, correct? Because that's already a kelim she'osim bohem ochel nefesh. And the Gemara is analyzing this from the perspective of makom she'ein derech laskiram. So even though I can't rent the spoon and I can't convert it there for dini mominus, nevertheless it's also because I can take the spoon and that's what I'm going to do with it, and I'm going to use it to eat my food. So the Gemara says the following. Okay, we'll come back to this point in just a minute. Let's go on to the next case in the Mishnah. The Mishnah has drisas haregel. So the Gemara says, holo kapti inchi. Oh, so the Gemara says the following. I'm not so necessarily so eager or so willing to lend my kalim to you, because, you know, I need them for myself, or maybe you'll ruin the kli, or maybe you'll forget to return it to me. So therefore, if I lend you my spoon, that's considered a hanah. That's something significant. But let's get to drisas regel. The Gemara claims, again, you and I might come to a different sociological conclusion, but the Gemara claims, holo kapti inshi. Nobody seems to care about drisas regel. I mean, if you want to envision it, let's say you have a massive field, and, you know, during the winter season it's not planted, and I would even go a step further. The Gemara has in Bava Basra cases where drisas regel is actually beneficial for the field. It's almost like harisha; it softens the ground and it prepares it for planting. But again, that doesn't appear here in our city. But I'm just saying, lo kapti inshi, meaning people generally speaking couldn't care less about drisas regel. So now, when the noder, the person who took the neder, he said that I'm gonna prohibit myself from you, from benefiting from you, he didn't have in mind to prohibit drisas regel, because he never thought that it would be a great favor on someone's part to give him the benefit of drisas regel. He assumed that drisas regel is mutter for everybody, meaning nobody would be makpid on drisas regel. So what was the great favor that you did me by inviting me for drisas regel, and then you want to tell me that that's going to be the difference between mudra anomi chavero and mudra ochel mimenu? Even in the case of mudra anomi chavero, one could ostensibly argue that's not included in mudra anomi. When he took upon himself not to get benefits from someone, those were benefits that he thought that would be a gift on the other person's part, right? That he's makpid, and yet he looked the other way. So, my Rava Hamani, this Mishnah therefore reflects the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. What's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer? The Omar Vitur Asur B'Mudra No. Vitur means, in a case where most people would never be makbid about it, they wouldn't be Omid Al Shalahem and say, well, it's mine and I'm not going to give it to you. But legally they have the rights to do so, and therefore you need a Vitur. Vitur means they have to give you permission. Once they have to give you permission, that's already considered hanah, meaning there are two levels of hanah. If before Rabbi Eliezer, we would have said the real level of hanah is something that people would normally not do, and they gave you gratis. That's really giving you hanah. That's a violation of mudra hanah. But in a case where most people in those situations would not care one way or the other, then giving permission, where you would give permission, collaterally to everyone, universally to everyone, that's not called hanah. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer and he says, no, even vitur, the very fact that you need permission from him, and he has to look the other way and grant you permission, that itself constitutes a hanah. Let me just read to you the masifta here. He adds a little bit here. He says the following. Where, in what context did Rabbi Eliezer make this statement? You and I would have thought that Rabbi Eliezer was talking about Mudar HaNor. No. Rabbi Eliezer was not talking about Mudar HaNor. He was talking about a whole different context. Our sugya is making an analogy between Rabbi Eliezer said in the case of Mocher L'Chavero Peros, which we'll get to in just a second, and our case of Mudar HaNor. So what's the original statement of Rabbi Eliezer? What's the context of Rabbi Eliezer? HaMocher L'Chavero Mida Shel Peros. I sell you, let's say, a bushel's worth of produce. V'derech ha-mochrim. Now, this is very interesting. This is so typical of what I call a free market. What's it called? What's the opposite of socialism?
Capitalism.
Yeah, capitalism. Or there's a French phrase that we all know.
Laissez-faire.
Not laissez-faire. Okay, I'll try to remember. Anyway, in a competitive capitalistic society, what do you do when you sell something to someone? You do something on their behalf. In other words, you give them what the Israelis call, it's an Arabic word, chupar. Are you familiar with that word? Yeah. I'll throw in a little bonus. Like in America, it's so typical. You know, they offer you a gift here and a gift there. And that's the way they seduce you to buy the product. So in the Derech HaMochrim, LaHosif LaKona Pri Echad Oshnayim Lo Tashlu. Right, so you bought a bushel, I'm going to throw in another apple or two apples gratis. And the question is, what happens in that particular case if there's Mudar HaNor? Meaning, we can assume that every mocher, every seller in that situation would add another apple. So in Mudar HaNor, let's say I'm Mudar HaNor from you, and you're the mocher, are you allowed to add the pre, that extra pre, within the context of a capitalistic enticement, you know, to get a person to buy from you? So you add an extra pre. And there are two opinions on that. One opinion says, well, you know, it's vitur, but everybody, you know, everybody who sells apples, they add an extra apple to boot, you know, beyond the measurement that they agreed upon, that he's paying for. Comes along Rabbi Eliezer, and he says that if the kone, the one who's buying, is mudar hanof for the mocher, he has prohibited himself, enjoined himself from getting any benefit from the mocher, that he's not allowed to accept one extra fruit above and beyond the contractual agreement and the measure that he purchased that he's paying for. Why? Even though it's the derech ha-mochrim to be mavater, but nevertheless, it's still considered hanah. And therefore, let's apply the logic of Rabbi Eliezer to drisas rego. If I'm mudar hanor from you, and you're going to allow me to go through your field in order to get to where we have to get to, that requires a vitor. You have to give me permission to do so. It's true that anyone would give me that vitor, and you would be mavater for anybody. It's not something unusual, and it's not some gracious act on your behalf. But nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says that that's also. So our Mishnah reflects the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, that Mudar HaNor includes even Drisas Regel, except for the case of course, Mudar Mimenu Machol, and the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, they hold that Vitor is Mutar B'Mudar HaNor, that since anyone in that situation would give it to you, when he gives it to you, that's not called the HaNor. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, Drisas Regel will be Mutar, If we assume it's ein derech lahakpid al kach, that anyone in that situation would allow you to go through his field, then you're not giving him a hanor. So there are two categories. There's one category called vitur, and there's another category called hanor. The Chachom make a sharp distinction between the two. If it's a hanor, meaning nobody in that situation would have given it to you, and he gives it to you, that's a violation of real bona fide hanor. But if it's vitur, then anyone in that situation would have given it to you, just that you need official permission, because he has his legal rights to be makpid. In that case, the Chachamim say that's not considered hanor, it's not included in the purview of mudar hanor. But our Mishnah, in Drisus Regel, reflects the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer.
Quick question on that, which is, I don't know, but in the U.S. you go into like the little stores, they'll have a little thing, give a penny, take a penny, you know, where they have like a little penny, you know, so if you need to take a couple of pennies because you're short a couple or you don't want to deal with change.
I never saw it.
You can take and give and, you know.
Wait, where did you see it? Here in Shalat?
No, this is the U.S.
In the U.S. Because what I'm familiar with is, you know, in order to get a wagon sometimes in the supermarket, you need like the 5 shekels. So you go in, they give you the 5 shekels.
Yeah, but it's a few pennies sitting there and then, you know, you can take a couple, you know, it's $5.97. You've got $6. You don't want to. You know, you have exact change. You can give, you know, $6.02. You can give the extra 2 cents.
Right.
With that, because here it's not just, you know, a benefit that's open to everybody, but it's actual money.
Right. In that case, I would say that even a buddha ben a machal, if it's a shavu pruta, I don't know. Our pennies are probably far from shavu pruta. I don't even know if this is working.
I don't know. Tosa says you don't even need a shavu pruta.